Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to welcome as tonight's guest a person that is quite astute, original, and has something to offer to society and the world in terms of his thoughts and his book. And I'm very happy to have Ted Larkins with us tonight. Ted, I want you to know this is a wide-ranging podcast in which a lot of people all over the world are going to hear what you have to say. I'm very happy about it because the more people have to say about things, the more all of us can benefit and learn. This is going to be good. I'm happy to have you. And I'd like to begin by introducing Ted Larkins. Could you tell the people here, could you tell them and me as much as you want about your prior life and work?
You got it, Andrew. Nice to be here. Thanks so much for having me on. I started my career really bartending around the U.S., Andrew, in the mid-'80s. I bartended at the MGM Grand in Reno, Nevada, and at the Sheraton. And one day, my girlfriend said, "Hey, I got a job offer to play the piano in Osaka, Japan." So I followed her over there. And can you still hear me, Andrew?
I can hear you. I'm listening to every word.
Yeah. Thank you. So I put everything in storage. I went over to Japan, and 3 months later, she said, "Hey, I'm going back to the U.S. And I said, "Sayonara. I'm going to stay here." And I just thought, learning the Japanese language would be a great tool in my life arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
I was bartending over there. I met a guy. He said, "I'd like to live with your family." And he said, "Sure, move in, teach my kids English in exchange for a homestay for 6 months."
Mm-hmm.
And a few weeks into it, Andrew, he knocked on my door and said, "We do big business." He didn't speak much English. I said, "Sure." He handed me a ripped piece of paper. He said, "You call the number, I put James Dean on T-shirts." So I called the number. A guy answered. I said, "Hey, my name's Ted. I'm here in Japan. A guy wants to put James Dean on T-shirts." He said, "Well, my name's Marcus Winslow. I'm James Dean's cousin. This is called licensing. How much do you think you're going to do?" I asked Yoshida. I told him about $100,000. He said, "Okay, pay me 10%. That's a royalty. That's $10,000. I'll send you some photos." And the next thing you know, Yoshida's making some T-shirts of James Dean. A couple weeks later, he knocked on my door again, 10 o'clock at night, my bedroom door. He said, "I want to add baseball caps." I said, "Okay." I called him back, another $3,000. Andrew, over the next 6 years, that kept going on. We ended up doing $80 million in James Dean product, underwear, socks, shoes, belts. We paid his cousin over $4 million. And that was my foray, if you will, into the licensing world. And my six-month homestay turned into 6 years. I ended up representing Pepsi Cola, Paramount Pictures, MGM, Sony. I represented Celine Dion, Mariah Carey, worked with Bon Jovi. And so that's what I did for the last 30 years in product licensing. It was really, really fantastic.
Now, I want to pick up, Ted. You've given me a lot of information and things that I want to pick up on and know about. First of all, I want to ask, this is something that has always fascinated me, bartending. Now, did you find being a bartender a situation where you entered into, say, relationships with people? I'm not saying, intimacy, but conversational, friendly relations. So did you find bartending a valuable experience?
I hold that every person on the planet should be a bartender for at least 6 months, because you really learn about people. People come in and you get a feeling of like they're just everybody just like me. They're trying to be happy and they're trying to figure it out.
Right.
I met incredible people, and it was such a learning experience for me, and it really shaped how I viewed life from a more open viewpoint. Like, I would judge people, and then I realized after speaking to them a little while, they're just trying to figure it out, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this about bartending. Were you bartending mostly in the U.S.? Were you bartending in the U.S.?
Mostly in the U.S. and then, of course, over in Japan for a while.
So when you were bartending in the U.S., did you find that people – I'm interested in this because I occasionally go to bars, have a drink with them. So I'll ask you this about bartending. Did you find that people come to a bar – for a variety of reasons? Some come to have a drink, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Some come, it's possible, you'd have to verify this for me, there are some guys that go to a bar to pick up a woman. Is it, I mean, it's possible, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Yes. And the other way around. Come on, let's be honest.
And the other way around. So,
yes.
Okay, that's all right. You know, if somebody wants to meet someone, you can meet them in a bar. You know,
yeah, it's a nice place. It's casually you're sitting.
Meet somebody.
Yes, exactly.
So, and then other people come to a barn just to talk to somebody, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Do you think some people come to a barn to unburden themselves of their issues they may have? They don't have someone at home or people to talk to work out these issues. They may come to a bar to do that.
Oh, absolutely. I've spent many a night, Andrew, speaking to people that just are laying it out on the line, and especially after a couple of cocktails, you know, they just lay it out. And I've had regulars that would come to the bar just to talk to me because I was a, you know, they've got a captive audience. I'm there to talk to them, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was, look, I rarely had anybody that was, I mean, every once in a while you'd have a kind of a weirdo or whatever, but most people, in my experience, they would come and sit, have a casual drink, you know, either they're just passing some time, or like you said, they just want to, you know, share a little bit about their life, and they find a good bartender to do that with, they do that, or, you know, and it was really great, especially in the casino, you know, in the casino atmosphere at the MGM in Reno. Boy, I got everybody. One day I had
not only were you in bars, you were in several very significant businesses. MGM, right?
Mm-hmm. I was at the MGM Grand in Reno and at the swanky Tribeca restaurant in Beverly Hills. And, you know, I met Cher over the bar, you know, during one of the opening night parties. I met the lead singer for America. Mm-hmm. He came and sat at the bar and we chatted for a long time. Really just a fascinating period of my life.
Did you find that being in a bar, say, like in, you name some MGM, it was in Vegas, right?
Yeah, in Reno. Mm-hmm.
In Reno. Did you find a preference for bars where celebrities may go, or were you able to also relate to people? You might say there are blue-collar bars, right? I mean, blue-collars are right. People they're doing work, and it's a form of work.
But did you
bartend at blue-collar bars?
No, I don't. I think my bars, you know, the MGM Grand on the main casino floor, the Sheraton Grand in San Diego, you know, so they weren't really, you know, hotel bars mainly. So, no, I didn't really do the blue-collar type thing. Although, look, I had, again, on my bars, everybody came. And, again, one of the biggest lessons I learned is that everybody, you know, blue collar, white collar, celebrity, or, you know, anything in between are just people. Just figured it out, trying to be happy. It was beautiful. Yeah, it is.
Okay, now then after this, how long were you tending bar about?
Oh, probably five. Yeah, probably 5-6 years.
And with these, when you were bartending, I'm very interested in this because I believe what I say about bars and bartender, it has a socialization element with people
for
trying
to
like work out their problems or something. Mm-hmm. So did you? Find that you were sort of a therapist as a bartender?
Yeah, sometimes I felt like a therapist for sure. You know, helping people, talking to people, giving them the best advice as I could do. And you had to be careful. One time a guy came into the bar at the MGM, and he had mortgaged his house and came in, and he lost it all in the casino. He sat on my bar, and I just served him drink after drink. And I didn't think much of it. He was, you know, he was drowning his sorrows was kind of the way I looked at it. But the next night when I went into work, the manager called me in and said, "Hey, Ted, were you serving drinks to this guy with a cowboy hat?" I said, "Oh, yeah, Bart or Bert or whatever his name." Mm-hmm. And I laughed, and the manager didn't laugh. He said, "Ted, he passed out in the slot machines, and he's in the hospital."
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it was a big wake-up call to me, you know, that really you can go too far. You know, it's a big responsibility.
Okay, then you go to Japan, right?
Uh-huh.
And how did you happen to end up going to Japan? You met somebody, right?
Yeah, so my girlfriend came home and she said, hey, I got, you know, she was the piano singer at the piano lounge at the Sheraton, and we fell in love. I was the bartender. Mm-hmm. She's the piano singer. Mm-hmm. And we were living together, and she came home and said, hey, my agent gave me a job offer for 3 months to play the piano in Osaka, Japan. And she asked me, hey, do you want to go over? And I said, where is it? She said, it's in Japan on the other side of Hawaii. And I said, okay, I'll go. Mm-hmm. You know, 2 weeks later, I found myself over in Japan. It was really eye-opening.
Now, I'd like to get your insights. How long were you in Japan?
I lived in Japan for 8.5 years, but then I had a business. I owned a business over there for 25 years. So I went back almost every month, had an apartment there for 25 years.
Now, I've sort of picked up some indications or information that the status of women in Japan, perhaps it's changing, it may be changing, and I'm not making a stereotype, I don't know, mm-hmm. but it is a situation where they are sort of hemmed in. You get married by 28, you're out of the ballgame. Did you feel that was true?
Oh, it was absolutely true. Listen, I had a homestay for 6.5 years. And the man worked, and the woman, you know, she stayed home. Mitsuko was the woman. She took care of the kids. There wasn't even an option for her really to get a job because she was the housewife. And I found that it was very, very common. That's the way of the Japanese. Now, as you mentioned, it's changing. You know, they're becoming more modern. You know, more and more women are stepping out and having careers and not having children and things like that for sure. But it's still a very, you know, very traditional society.
So you might say the Japanese culture is like what the United States used to be like, say, in the 40s.
Yeah,
maybe.
Sure.
When women didn't work.
Yeah, yeah. When they got married, they had kids. That was their goal.
Yeah. So did you feel, I mean, I can't say that they are somewhat, I don't want to say behind. That isn't right. That's their society, and they have a right to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They want to structure their society is fine, you know. But did you feel that these kind of things are somewhat a little bit behind the times?
You know, it's hard to say it like that, Andrew, because I hear what you're saying. You know, well, you know, you want liberation and women's rights, which I'm all into. You know, I'm married for 23 years now. And, you know, my wife didn't take my name, and we're as equal as it comes.
Right.
And I'm all about that. I love that. But the culture in Japan is not there yet, and the women, for the most part, you know, like where is, you know, in my experience, you know, they like where it is. And the ones that don't, that want more independence, are stepping out and doing that. But I don't look at it as behind, although I suppose in one sense it will become, over the years, it will become more and more westernized in the sense that women will have more equal rights than they do now, for sure.
Or at least more options. I mean,
yes,
I'm not saying I'm not making a stereotype judgment on anybody, but mm-hmm. I would think a woman might – there are certain women who might feel they don't want to be hemmed in like that. They want to have a job where they can
mm-hmm.
go out
yep.
and, you know, something like
yeah.
that, you know, which doesn't yeah. mean they're – you know, it's a reasonable thing to do. The woman may want to work and have a job and be with people rather than being
yeah.
home all the time. It's a possibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway – but I'm told things are changing a bit. There's been that the I'm told that the many women are in rebellion against this kind of compulsion to get married, stay married, and be home from 26 on. But you could tell me if that was so. You felt that was so when you were there.
Well, it was less so, you know. But I think you're right. You know, I was there. 30 years ago, and it was much more very traditional that way. And now it is certainly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Women are coming out and you know, demanding more rights, equal pay, and things like that more and more. And
mm-hmm.
I think it's beautiful. I think I love it. And, you know, I think you're right. More and more people over in Japan are starting to do that. But for me, it was such an eye-opening experience to live there. I went down to the Zen temples
right.
in Hiroshima and meditated with the monks
did,
down there. Yeah, it was just
mm-hmm.
an incredible experience to be in Kyoto where, you know, I was in temples that were 3,000 years old. And it's just stunning. You know, the history, really fantastic.
Well, that must have been fascinating. Were these Buddhist temples?
Yeah, mostly Buddhist temple. They have their main two religions are Shinto and Buddhism over in Japan. And Kyoto, was the ancient capital up until the 1850s. And, it wasn't touched during the war. You know, a lot of the cities in Japan were bombed by the Americans towards the end of the war, but Kyoto was spared. And it has some incredible, incredible architecture and old statues and things and just some great history, thousands and thousands of years. It's incredible.
So you had contact and observation with monks?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I did. I was lucky.
And
I had.
Did you feel that Buddhism and Shintoism may have, or could, did have something to offer you, as a result of your contact with it?
Yeah, I love exploring all religions and all beliefs. I mean, one of my mm-hmm. sayings, Andrew, is I don't not believe in anything. I don't not believe in anything, meaning, look, it's everybody has their different beliefs and values and things, and I do the best I can because not to hold on to any one of them, you know? And so, I was brought up a Christian, in Columbus, Ohio. I was a Lutheran. But then I went to Japan, and I learned about Buddhism and their teachings, and I embraced that. It was just some beautiful stuff. I went over to Calcutta. I met Mother Teresa, and I worked in her orphanages and sat with the sadhus traveling over into – yes, and it was really fascinating. Yes, it was really, really great. Really,
Mother Teresa? What else? I didn't hear you talk about other things.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, so I met Mother Teresa. I worked in her orphanages and then, volunteered. And then I went to Varanasi, and I hung out with the sadhus. The sadhus are a traveling tribe, that's all they do their whole lives is just travel and live off the land. And I got to spend some time with them.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it was. It was wonderful.
That's
really
great.
Interesting.
I mean, I think it's great you're being with people that perhaps have more to offer the world than many of us who simply stick to the grind or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
What did you do in Japan? It was a kind of a business thing you mentioned. Thing you did?
Yeah, so I represented, Paramount Pictures and Sony and DreamWorks and Fox. And what I did over there is, like, I would take their movie properties, like, for example, Godfather from Paramount Pictures. And as their agent over there, I would go to companies and say, hey, do you want to put, an image of Godfather on a T-shirt? Or we did Godfather Wine, I think. Or we took Roman Holiday, a famous, the 1953 Audrey Hepburn film, and we did a stage play.
Oh, yeah,
we would generate
that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we did a lot of licensing deals. That was the main business I did over there.
So you did pretty well there in that business.
I did.
From my impression,
I did great. Yeah, it was fun. It was really great. I really, the concepts. One of the concepts that I live by is the get to principle. Is kind of where I come from, and it's based on my book called Get to Be Happy. Is about the get to state of mind, as opposed to I have to. You say I get to, and it's a real subtle shift in your mindset, and it really started solidifying for me when I lived in Japan. And instead of being the victim of I have to do this, I have to do that, saying I get to, and it really is powerful. And so that really started to come to me as I was living in Japan.
Now, you've given me indication, everybody here, I think, first of all, I could see you're I don't know you personally, Ted, but I have had the opportunity to talk to you and gain some insights into your personality and character. You're a guy who can make adjustments to different cultures, different people, all kinds of people, so you don't have that problem.
No, I was, I don't know where...
You have to be with the one... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't.
You don't
look,
have to
I had
anybody in particular. You can handle most people.
Yes, I had dinner with Masayoshi Son. He was the richest man in Japan. He owns Yahoo Japan, and so I had a private dinner with him because he was going after the rights for one of the movie studios, and so I was translating, and so it's just me and this guy from one of the studios and Masayoshi Son having dinner, and here's this billionaire. And we just hung out and rapped. And then not too long later, I was in a temple with a monk who had nothing. And we just hung out and rapped. And It was just fascinating, just feeling all the different people. You know, I was lucky. I met John Bon Jovi and the band over in Japan. I did a slot machine with Bon Jovi. I negotiated that deal. And so when John and the band were over, I got to hang out with them for a number of days, for about a week. And we went to dinners and hung out. And I'll tell you, you know, at first, you know, John was a little bit standoffish. But I'll tell you what, once I got to know him, he became just the nicest guy. And one of the biggest things I learned meeting Celine Dion and Mariah Carey and all these people, at first they seem a little standoffish maybe, but in the end, once there's trust built, they, just like us, like we were speaking earlier, they're just trying to be happy, Andrew. They're just trying to figure this thing called life out. And that's the biggest lessons that I've learned.
Let me ask you this. You had contact and relationships with, apparently, with extremely wealthy people. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes,
Did you find that they were, did you find a confirmation of a, perhaps a stereotype of arrogance or whatever, or did you find that that wealth did not affect that person in that respect?
Well, I'll tell you. I think in the end, at the bottom of everybody, you know, when we're born, we just have this beautiful, I believe every human, it's in our core, has this want to be happy. You know, the Dalai Lama, he says in his book, The Book of Joy, he says, after much consideration, I believe the purpose of life is to find happiness. And I agree with that. I think everybody I've met at the core is looking for that. And somewhere along the line, people get messed up. I've met rich people that are, as you said, very arrogant, and they just can't. But I believe under it, there can be beauty. But I have met a lot of very wealthy people that in the end, after knowing them a little bit, they're just great. They're just doing the best they can. They've got wealth or what have you. And, you know, they're just super. And I've met a couple of American people, and I'm like, I just won't be their friend. But I've met poor people that I think are great and poor people that are arrogant as well, and I don't want to be around, you know?
That's right. Well, that's true. Okay, now you've given me an indication of your very rich past experiences. Tell me a little about what you're doing these days, and tell me about your book. Tell me
about what you're doing
these days, what you're into, and tell me about your book, and everybody else is listening.
Yes, thank you. So we, you know, 4 years ago I started, I gave the reins of Japan back to my partners there, and I started working for a company called DHX Media up in Hollywood. And it's a two-hour one-way train commute for me from southern Orange County here in California up to Hollywood. And DHX Media, they own Teletubbies, they own Peanuts, you know, Snoopy, that whole thing, and Inspector Gadget. And I was doing the licensing for those here in the U.S. But during my train commute, I started writing a book, and it was all based around this get-to philosophy that I had developed during my time in Japan. And the book is called Get To Be Happy, Stories and Secrets to Loving the S Out of Life, and I'll save that word. And I'll tell you, it's really a powerful book. I was a finalist for the very prestigious Eric Hoffer Book Award. Audible, it's on Audible. If anybody listens to books on audio, they liked the book so much, the staff at Audible, that they had me into their head office in Newark to do an interview. And it's just a powerful story, and it just shares this, look, we're not victims to life. When we say, I have to do the dishes, I have to go to work, I have to play with my kids, it's a victim standpoint. And just shifting over and saying, I get to, you step into a sense of power. That's very beautiful, Andrew. Mm-hmm. It's really a great way to live, and I think this book is really resonating with people.
Now, I want everybody to know where they can get the book, who's a publisher, and where it can be obtained, and the full title. So what's the full title?
So the full title is Get To Be Happy. That's the title, Get To Be Happy.
Okay, and where can we get this book?
You can go to tedlarkins.com, tedlarkins.com, that's my name. And you can order it, you can get it there. You could go straight to Amazon, it's on Amazon, it's got, you know, 95 some five-star reviews, and I think you'll really find a lot of information. And on my website at tedlarkins.com, I offer coaching. That's one of the things that I'm doing now in happiness. I was honored today. I spoke at the company Kelly Blue Book, if you're familiar with them, and that, you know, to their 200 folk, and just shared this get-to mindset, and they were riveted. They were just like, wow, I don't have to be a victim. Mm-hmm. I get to do this. It was very, very cool. So mm-hmm. that's what I'm up to. On my website, Andrew, if anybody goes there, I offer a free...
Okay, I'm going to what's your website, Ted, so I can take a look at it?
Yeah, tedlarkins.com, tedlarkins.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go on. You can sign up for a free coaching session with me, which I love to do, and just to explore life and this whole thing about where you want to go in life and using the get-to principle. It's really, I offer a really fun path to get.
Yeah, I might want to do that, actually. I could use some pointers to get
there
some improvement in my life.
We all...
Hey, let me ask you this, Ted.
Yes.
Go ahead. Do you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, look, you know, I do coaching and seminars. I do public speaking and things. But, you know, I have my own coach. I have a coach. I've had a coach for years because having somebody that I can speak to for once a week that really is a third person and knows how to help direct me and help keep me accountable is a powerful ally in life. And I love to have it, and I love to offer it to people.
Let me ask you this. Now, I'm going to go into a little bit of a thing that I have some thoughts on. I'd like to hear your thoughts. We live in the United States, for want of a better word, of a capitalist system, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, this system, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, it's based on wealth acquisition. Mm-hmm. In other words, the people who get the money or they get ahead, and the people that do not do that stay behind. Or you might say the stronger people get farther and the weaker people are left behind, in some sense.
Mm-hmm.
How do you
think
about that?
I mean, you know,
I think that? I mean, do you think I'm right on it?
I think you're right. And I do think that, you know, one of the things I say that there's four myths about happiness. Now, this goes back to, you know, I think most of us are looking for happiness, but our society is based, like you say, on wealth building, right? But there's four myths to happiness, and the first myth is that being rich will make you happy. And the truth is, as we talked about, being rich doesn't make you happy. But yet we try to attain that, and this is what we're taught in this economy, you know, get more, attain-itis, I call it. Attain more stuff,
well,
right?
Is, yeah, it's true.
It's
that
like
is
a sickness. We,
correct?
We want to get more. And the more you can pull yourself out of that and get quiet in yourself and just be present, the less you have a need for that. And I think that message, this mindfulness movement that's going on, even here in the U.S., is very powerful. And I think that's a great thing that people could attain to. And, you know, quit going for things and really find the beauty in just touching a blade of grass or sitting quiet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy, but if you can, you know, and that's what this get-to principle is all about. The more you say, I get to, the more you are in control of your life and you can really just smile and feel happy.
But isn't our society, is happiness possible in a society such as ours, which is based on competition? It's based on I'm going to outdo this guy, and I'm going to beat him out, and therefore everybody is in a competitive relationship with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So are those people, is this a very happy situation?
That doesn't feel happy to me. And I myself, you know, really work at staying out of that. And I do meditation. You know, there's tons of meditation apps out in the market. There's one called Headspace that I use, which is just fantastic. This guy, he's got all kinds. You can do it for 5 minutes and just take the time to sit quiet and let your mind get quiet. And you'll realize that this competitiveness and this everything that's going on really isn't real.
You know?
And so I highly recommend that, you know, just stepping out and getting peaceful within yourself.
Let me ask you this. I see some certain valid points in socialism in the sense that for me, you may feel differently about it, and that's fine. I object to class-based systems. I think they divide people. I think they put barriers between human relationships. Well, that's why I have a certain kind of sympathy for socialism, which attempts to eliminate class structures.
Mm.
What do you think of class structures?
I don't like any structure that limits any human being or puts any human being higher or lower or than anybody else. We each have our our unique abilities as a human being. And so anything that supports splitting classes or making somebody better or worse because of how they were born or what family they were born into or how much they have or anything like that, I just don't buy into it. It's real. I'm not saying it's not out there. But for myself, I just think I've met too many human beings and have realized that we are all on the same path in life to say that, that's just my thing.
I think you're right, Ted. I agree with you. But we all have to live in the world, our society, as it is developed, and that's it.
It's so true. I know.
But, it's true. So anyway, I would definitely recommend your book. I think you have a lot of good points to make. I think you have a lot of fantastic experiences to offer. And
thank you.
I'm very glad I had you on the show. And I'm going to post this on social media. Are you able to get it? If you want to, you can give me a link and I'll send it to you.
That's fantastic. I would love to get that. I've got, I'm on Instagram.
Send me a link on my email.
I'll send you the link. Yeah.
And I'll send
great.
It to you.
That would be fantastic.
I'm very glad to have you. I think you had some very valid points, which I was in full agreement with, that you might say that the main point is we're all just people.
We're all just people trying to be happy. And it's not
trying to find your way through their lives in a successful fashion.
And I just –
Ted.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks so much for your time, Andrew. Great to be on your show.
Anytime. I enjoyed it. Okay.
Thank you.
Send me the link. I'll send you the show.
You got it. I will. Thank you, Andrew.
Bye. Bye.